John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The mental health of college students is what we're going to talk about this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. College campuses across the country are reporting that their students are increasingly relying on mental health centers. Students that go to these counseling centers seek help for anxiety and depression. It's unclear why the rates of mental health problems seem to be increasing among college students. This hour, a pair of experts are going to weigh in on this trend. I'm joined this afternoon on the Kathleen Dunn Show by Andrea Peterson, who writes about health and travel for the Wall Street Journal. She's written multiple articles about the mental health of college students, and she has a book coming out in May of 2017 titled On Edge, A Journey Through Anxiety. Andrea Peterson, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining me is Johanna Jarko, an assistant professor of health and psychology at Stony Brook University. She's been published in many scholarly journals. She's part of a research program that bridges the areas of clinical development and social effective neuroscience and is currently researching, has ongoing work with college students aiming to predict violence following social rejection. Johanna Jarko, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Program.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Andrea, we'll start with you. You recently wrote about anti-anxiety classes at Ohio State University. How common are these courses across the country?
Well, universities across the country are seeing just a dramatically increasing demand for mental health services, and they're grappling with that and, you know, trying to basically serve, you know, this rising number of students. So they're doing things like launching workshops because they just simply can't see as many students that want to have individual counseling. They can't see them all. So they're doing things like, you know, group therapy programs, workshops like the ones that I visited at Ohio State, wellness coaching programs using peer counselors where students help other students with things that are not, that maybe not don't rise to sort of a mental illness. Because the thing is that college counseling centers deal with everything from bipolar disorder to, you know, someone who's going through a bad breakup or is worried about failing a test. So it's a real range of issues. But on the backdrop of this is that they're seeing, you know, about 17% of college students were diagnosed with or treated for anxiety problems during the past year. About 14% were diagnosed with or treated for depression. And that is up from about 11% for anxiety and 10% for depression just 5 years ago.
Hmm. And over the last 5 years, Ohio State saw a 43% increase in the number of students seeking help for mental health issues. That's a pretty big number. So, and the numbers that you just gave us, significant increases. Two questions arise. One, do we have any idea why this is happening? And two, are the levels of anxiety and depression among college students greater than that in the general population?
Well, those are not super straightforward questions to answer, because the honest answer is that nobody knows for sure. People have a lot of ideas about why this might be happening. I mean, therapists have pointed out to me everything from, you know, the economy to the rising cost of tuition to the impact of social media. You know, a lot of students know that social media is like sort of a highlight reel of everyone's life, but it's very easy to sort of compare yourself to, you know, all the great things that you see happening to everybody else, and that is an added pressure. And also, you know, parents these days, you know, everyone's heard about the term helicopter parenting, where, you know, this parenting style that really doesn't allow adolescents or, you know, or children to experience failure. And so that when kids get to college and they're faced with all these new challenges, they're just not prepared when they mess up.
And Johanna, you are a professor at Stony Brook. Have you seen this increased need for mental health services among your students?
Absolutely. And I guess just to take just a brief step back, I think it's really important to recognize that the vast majority of these students who have mental disorders, most of them have an onset before they actually get to college. So some recent work suggests that as many as 80% of these kids who have disorders actually began experiencing symptoms when they were in high school, when they were in junior high. So it's not just a college-specific thing, but something that kind of happens all the way through development. And at Stony Brook in particular, we are also experiencing very high levels of need. And so people are kind of using these different kinds of strategies, like Andrea had mentioned, to kind of help address that need.
And I'll toss this out to both of you. And Andrea, you touched on this a little bit, maybe some things that have changed. But, I mean, college has always been a little bit stressful. I mean, for many students, if you're not going to the local U in your own town, so you're still living at home, you're out of the house for an extended period, you're away from your parents, that can be liberating but can also be an intimidating experience if you're not used to that. Are college students that much different today than they were 10, 20, 30 years ago? Are we maybe seeing more reporting because we have more awareness of it these days? Or is this a real sudden increase in the amount of anxiety we're having? Joanna, why don't you go first and then Andrea?
Sure. I think that, what we're seeing is people are, maybe being more aware of the fact that these kinds of diagnoses are out there. And maybe we're doing a much better job of allowing people to feel comfortable with seeking help. I mean, we've tried to eliminate some of the negative affect that's kind of surrounding people who have different kinds of mental disorders, and maybe we're just doing a better job at that. And another thing to point out, and I think that Andrea made a great point of this in her recent article, is that, we have better treatments for people. And so maybe more and more people with mental disorders are able to go to college in a way that they really weren't before.
Mm-hmm. But going back to Andrea, going back to you on the whole helicopter parent thing, there's the stakes of higher education are much higher, seemingly. The stakes of education in general are much higher. A great deal of pressure. Is that part of what's feeding this?
I mean, I was recently actually back at my alma mater, University of Michigan, talking to students, many of whom are mental health advocates now, and they really did paint a picture for me of a pressure cooker school that I didn't really recognize from my time there. That there does seem to be, because there is growing awareness. I mean, these are kids who came of age, who were growing up during an economic recession. Pretty much, having a bachelor's degree isn't a job isn't a sort of a sure thing after that. The pressure seems to start a lot earlier now that the kids are gunning for, very competitive internships sort of right off the bat from their freshman year. When I was in college, I worked as a cocktail waitress in an Irish bar the summer after my freshman year. And, these kids are not doing anything like that. I mean, obviously, some of these kids are lucky in that they don't necessarily have to, make money. Really, the internships, already thinking about applying to graduate schools and the grades that they're going to need to get into right away. I think the rising tuition is a serious factor too, because, the students I've talked to who are relying on scholarships, they've got to maintain a certain grade point average, and that adds a lot of stress onto it as well. But back to, what Dr. Jarko was saying, I mean, that, some of the counseling centers did, they have really made a very strong push in the last 5 to 10 years to make themselves seem very welcoming and, just not a scary place. They've gone out into the community. They do, when I was at Ohio State, they had this really fun recess event where, kids were playing with a big parachute and you could pet therapy dogs and so they're very visible and trying to make, going to the counseling center seem like not a big deal, not something to be ashamed of at all. So I think counseling centers have done a great job of sort of reducing stigma, and that has led to higher, people being more comfortable coming in. Also, there's advocacy groups, like Active Minds, which is a mental health advocacy group run by students, has support groups all over the country in more than 400 campuses. There's a lot of celebrities now that are coming out and being really open about their mental health challenges. And I think that is just, building a conversation around mental health that is, this younger generation is just much more comfortable talking about their issues.
Well, hey, one thing that's changed, and this is relates, Andrea, to something you said about tuition, the cost of education, and so forth, that's changed. I was a college freshman in 1971, so now you know how old I am. my point is that I did not have a part-time job during the school year until I was a senior, and I got a work-study award. But until then, I never worked, unless it was something I picked up on the weekend just to have extra money for foosball. I worked in the summer, and I had, you know, but a whole year of school cost me about $1,000.
Wow.
And so I went to school, I hung out with my friends, and I was busy, but I didn't have to worry about where I was going to find the money to pay the rent. And now the college students that I see on the campus where I work, many of them have multiple part-time jobs plus going to school full-time. That's an enormous amount of stress. No wonder there's anxiety.
Right. And even if their parents are paying for it, they're very aware of, you know, how much it's costing and how much sacrifice, you know, they and their families are having to make.
Mm. And just to kind of jump in with that, at Stony Brook we have an amazing student body, and a lot of them are commuters, a lot of them are first-generation attendees at college, and they do more than I could have ever imagined having to do as a student myself. So having these multiple jobs and being so aware of the financial costs, it's just remarkable. Mm. And, you know, you talk about being in a pressure cooker, and you talk about kind of doing these very formal academic striving activities from a much earlier age. So instead of doing the things that you would normally do during development, which is learning to interact with your peers and really kind of getting that broader experience, you're doing things like studying all the time or doing much more kind of regimented activities in order to build your resume to get to that next place. And so I think that we're kind of in a situation where we're skipping over very important developmental steps in order to get this academic success.
That's a really good point. I was talking to, there's actually a program at Columbia called the LEAP program, which is all about sort of getting students that have mental health issues sort of ready for college. And a lot of the things that they do is actually not really mental health related at all. They're these developmental steps that, because kids are so sort of focused on academic achievements, a lot of them, you know, kind of skip over. Like, as parents, I think we're doing a lot of things for kids to let them sort of focus on the academics. But things like, you know, managing a budget, making doctors and dentist appointments for themselves, things that they're going to face, you know, changing the oil, you know, knowing what to do if the car breaks down, things that they're going to have to handle when they're in college. But they don't necessarily get to learn those things before they go. And so when they do face that, you know, coupled, you know, on top of all the other issues, and if they've, as you mentioned, a lot of them are coming in with some mental health challenges, it can really be sort of a perfect storm of events that can, you know, be pretty traumatic.
Mm-hmm. College can be a pretty scary place, although that's seems to be a more recent development. I just remember really enjoying my 4 years of undergraduate education. Part of it, I suppose, was in that day and age. I never doubted for a second that when I graduated, I was going to find a job. And today, there's probably a lot more anxiety about that as well. One thing I'm anxious about is that it's time for a break, and so we better... We'd better take that into account. And then when we come back, Professor Jarko, I'd like you to tell us when we return a little bit about what's going on with the adolescent brain and how its development might be affecting students. I'd like to get into that a little more. We'll have more from Andrea Peterson as well. And more importantly than all of that, are your calls and emails and Facebook comments. Really would like to know what you think about this. Maybe you're a college student. Tell us what your experience is like and what sorts of problems you might be having. If you're a parent of a college student, what are your children going through? What do you see happening with them? And maybe you're somebody who works on a college campus. Maybe you work in the mental health field. What are you seeing on your campuses? Let us know. What's your story? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. org is the email address. And you can also find the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and leave a comment or a question there. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network, and we're talking about mental health needs and resources on college campuses. I'm joined in this hour by a pair of guests. Andrea Peterson is a health reporter at the Wall Street Journal, and Dr. Johanna Jarko is a health and psychology professor at Stony Brook University. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. Professor Jarko, what's going on in the adolescent brain at this point? We've got college freshmen. These brains aren't fully developed, are they? And how does this affect what college students experience?
Well, there's a whole lot going on in the brain of college students, that's for sure. So you're absolutely right. The brain really continues to develop, not just during childhood, but it really continues to mature well into our 20s. And so what happens when you have these just late adolescents who are coming into their first year of college, their brain is still continuing to form, and some of the areas of the brain that are continuing to mature are those in the prefrontal cortex, so that large area of the brain kind of behind your eyes. And these areas of the brain, they're continuing to change, both in terms of their structure, but also in terms of their function. And these areas are often implicated in things like controlling your emotions, controlling your behaviors, and really kind of regulating your emotional responses, your behavioral responses. And because they're still kind of continuing to develop, sometimes you can kind of get a little bit out of balance and be a little bit less able to kind of engage these regions in the ways that a fully formed adult would. So in order to shift your behavior in ways that might be more adaptive for a certain situation. And this is thought to sometimes lead to adolescents and young adults taking more risks and being more impulsive in certain kinds of contexts. So I don't want people to think that adolescents and young adults are just simply more impulsive, but they're really in these specific contexts. And what's interesting is that these contexts are the ones that are most important to this age group. So this is often when people are around their peers. So they end up being somewhat more impulsive or making decisions that maybe aren't the best for them when they are around their peers and in a situation where they could potentially be more kind of influenced by them. So it's a really interesting time. And so when you think about going to college for the first time, you're really shifting your focus from your kind of parental frame to your peer frame. So you're living in a dorm for the first time away from your parents, and you're having to make all of these new kinds of decisions all by yourself in a way that you haven't before. And so it's not really that surprising that you begin to see things break down a little bit when people already have these kinds of predispositions to certain forms of mental disorders.
Hmm. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. Will is joining us from the UP of Michigan. And Will, good afternoon. Welcome to the Kathleen Dunn program.
Hi, how are you doing? This is a wonderful conversation, and I definitely agree with everything that your experts have discussed. I'm the president of the graduate student government at my university, and so kind of the clearinghouse for a lot of issues related to mental health and even student health insurance, stuff like that. And one thing that I think this conversation hasn't included yet is, I guess, the role of technology in the student's ability to reflect on their issues and stressors. So I think that most students today are receiving multiple layers of technology at one time. They're not just watching a movie. They're also on their phone and on the computer. And their brain is not able to do the work that it needs to do to process their stresses.
Mm, okay. Professor Jarko, Andrea Peterson, who wants to take that one?
From an evolutionary perspective, yeah, certainly. We did not evolve to be able to kind of do this level of multitasking that we're not now asked to do. And there has been evidence from social and health psychology research that demonstrates that when people kind of talk about their problems but don't really process them in a an effective way, that that can sometimes worsen their symptoms. So sometimes, you know, writing something about how you feel on Facebook but not fully processing it, that might actually be potentially contributing to people's negative feelings. Now, that being said, there can also be kind of positive effects as well, where your friends might chime in and you get more social support than you would otherwise when you can't necessarily have face-to-face kinds of interactions. But there's no question that the kind of multitasking that we often engage in now, it doesn't allow you to really deeply process the types of events that are going on. And I think that in some regards, this kind of might be contributing to impulsive kinds of behaviors. If you're not fully kind of contemplating a certain event, you're just kind of responding in an out-of-hand kind of way.
And there actually, I'll add on to what Professor Darko was saying. There are some studies that show a link between social media use and anxiety and depression symptoms. And it seems that there's actually certain kinds of social media consumption, sort of passively scrolling through Facebook, actually is more likely to lead to mental health issues. So if you're actually actively engaging and you're posting, and that's less associated. But if you're just simply sort of passively looking at everyone else's, you know, fabulous pictures of their parties or vacations, that can lead to some anxiety and depression symptoms.
And on top of that, I mean, if you really look at adolescent girls, for instance, they care a lot about the number of likes that they get or the number of thumbs up that they get. And, you know, this is something that, you know, we didn't have 10 years ago. And so this is this remarkable opportunity to feel socially excluded or less than much, much more often than we used to. So instead of just kind of feeling like something didn't go well at school, or maybe you weren't invited to the one party that you knew about over the weekend, you're seeing all of these things where you weren't necessarily invited or that you're not necessarily being thought of as kind of part of the crowd. And that can have very negative implications.
One interesting thing that also one of the students that I met with at University of Michigan said that actually this kind of sort of boasting on social media, they actually found that it was affecting real-life conversations. They felt like that even when they were meeting people face-to-face, that sort of there's kind of a hangover effect where people were kind of, you know, speaking in that more sort of boastful way.
Mm. And well, what about are there so then I guess that suggests to me that there are factors here that are gender specific. What factors then would be a problem or would represent a unique risk for men?
Well, it's interesting. In a lot of the statistics in terms of who actually goes to seek counseling, men are definitely underrepresented. And a lot of the college counseling centers that I spoke with said that they, you know, are really doing a lot of work to try to get men to seek help, because there does seem to be more stigma among guys, and particularly certain groups of guys, whether it's the Greek system or it's you know, athletic teams or communities of color, that there is more sort of stigma about seeking help for mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about the mental health issues confronting today's college students with Andrea Peterson and Johanna Jarko, and with you at 800-642-1234. Linda is with us this afternoon from Ashland. Linda, hello.
Hi. See, I was listening to you guys here this afternoon, and I didn't go to college myself or anything, but I live in a little college town here, so you watch it kind of vicariously. And I was wondering if a lot of this mental health uprise, whatever you call it, a greater presence, awareness of it, is not brought on by the kids seem to carry a false persona where they're so obligated to be politically correct and diplomatic and so on and so forth. And we used to call it school. And I just wonder if that doesn't cause a lot of pressure on people. Then that's like, you know, oh, that's so me, right? You know. And then also this thing is if watching movies or whatever, I don't think kids watch soap operas too much anymore, but it was always the elite, the Gucci people that had to go to see the shrink, the psychiatrist, my counselor, and maybe it's partly a fad thing.
Linda, thanks. Thanks for sharing your insights with us. Is seeing counselors a fad, do you think?
I mean, I think that the caller touched on something really important, which is that the tendency to seek help is often influenced by the culture that's in a certain school or that's in a certain social group. And whether you would call it a fad or not, I mean, I think that it's when something becomes socially acceptable, in this case going to seek help, which is a positive thing. I mean, I think that is very much influenced by the culture in which you are existing. And the fact that men are seeking mental health help less frequently than women kind of speaks to that. There is also the fact that for anxiety and depression, that is a more prevalent, those are more prevalent conditions in women than in men. However, even among men with anxiety and depression, they do seem to seek help less often. And I guess the other thing is, you know, this idea of social comparison. We're living in a time now when people with certain things have so many more things than those without. And so being in a position where we're all very aware of what those people who have so much wealth, so much status, and compared to ourselves, and we see that on things like Facebook or different types of social media, that could potentially have a negative effect on you and really kind of reduce your self-esteem and kind of make you feel less than as a person.
Well, the constant comparison and the drive to succeed, she talked a lot about the pressure that's on students to be cool. Andrea, is that feeding this as well? I think we touched on this just maybe a little bit earlier.
I mean, I think that's been a perennial. I think that's just sort of a something that goes along with being an adolescent is, you know, you're comparing yourself to your peers. Obviously, with the rise of social media and just ubiquity of media or YouTube videos, you know, that there does seem to, and just sort of the rise in kind of celebrity culture, that I'm sure that does have an impact as well.
800-642-1234. Linda, thanks for the call. Let's go to Stoughton next. And Jeff is with us. Jeff, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me, or John. I guess I've been trying to think of the phrase here, and new normal is the first thing I want to say. And what's caught my ear in this conversation and several prior conversations has been, you know, the framework of the research. And in this case, it was your comment about being a 71 freshman. It's almost like, you know, a study done in 2016 is being viewed or expected. The frame of reference is some long ago time period, like when you were a freshman. And so this new normal comes to my mind here. It's like, well, are we comparing the experience today in 2016 with the experience you had in 71 or the experience I had in 91, and trying to keep it the same now, even though what you and I had, you know, in 20 or 30 years ago is vastly different, we still kind of expect the same outcome. And that's kind of an interesting thread that a couple people have come close to at this point, but it's a little disturbing to hear the implicit assumption that we should be getting the same results now that we had in 91 or 81 or 71.
Yeah, I just to clarify, I don't think I was suggesting that we should have the same experiences or the same expectations. I guess I was trying to make a comparison. Just the things are different, and students have a whole different set of challenges today than I had. And perhaps if I was just starting, this things would, well, not perhaps, if I was just starting out, things would be completely different for me. So I hope I didn't create the impression that I thought that things weren't supposed to change, because goodness knows, change is probably the only constant we will ever experience. But Jeff, thanks for your comments. Andrea, Professor Jarko, anything you'd like to add to what Jeff had to say?
We do try to update our research, and we aren't necessarily comparing results from today with those that were obtained 20, 30 years ago. But I think that he does touch on an interesting and important point, is that our methodologies really need to kind of keep up with the times. And so whereas we might have been able to get a pretty accurate picture of things with a paper and pencil questionnaire or a one-on-one interview with people, 20, 30 years ago, we need to get more data from people now. And that comes in the form of, getting information about people's use of social media, their use of texting, how often are they in touch with their friends. We can't make those assumptions anymore about the amount of contact that people have, because people are interacting with their social network in such a vastly different way than they used to. So I think that our methodology is just beginning to kind of catch up with the times, so to speak, in a way that will allow us to get a much richer picture of how people do live their day-to-day lives and how that is influencing their mental health.
And what's interesting, though, is that college counseling centers themselves are actually really harnessing technology as a way to reach students where they are. At Central Florida, the counseling center is really active on Twitter and Instagram. They have their therapy dog, Bodie, has his own page. They also launched a 7-week online therapy program for anxiety. And so students can do their do this treatment in whenever they want on their smartphone. So in terms of even the treatment, though, and the outreach that colleges are using to reach students is definitely being updated as well.
All right. Well, we're about at a time when we should take another break, so we'll do that right now. It's convenient. And then we'll come back. We have more callers who want to join us. There's a line open for you if you'd like to call now at 800-642-1234. I'll be back in just a moment with Andrea Peterson, staff writer at the Wall Street Journal, and Johanna Jarko, assistant professor of health and psychology at Stony Brook University. We're talking about the mental health of college students these days, and would like to know what you think. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or you can respond to our topic on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about mental health needs and resources on college campuses. I have a pair of guests with me this hour. Andrea Peterson is a health reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Dr. Johanna Jarko is a health and psychology professor at Stony Brook University. Let's take some more phone calls. We'll go to William next, who's calling us from Middleton. William, hello.
Thank you for taking my call. I feel sorry for today's young students. They have money, debt, worries. During the years that they're in college and for many years thereafter, how that happened is because when I went to college, I went to a private college, there was, in effect, the Glass-Steagall Bank Control Act of 1933, which prevented the banks from using gambling with our deposits. We have our monies in banks, from gambling in stocks and other activities. They did many more now to perform what they did back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. When I went to a private college, I just had a small scholarship. I had no money worries. I had most of it from my own pocket that I worked during the summertime and everything. Had to pay only some $600 for room and board and tuition. My money was mostly mine. I got a little bit of a grant to help me. Now mm-hmm. The young kids, they're deeply in debt. Already when they're in college, they have worries. When they're out of college, they got worries.
Okay.
Yes, they are stressed. And the person who is responsible, the worst president we ever had, I'm very strong about this, Bill Clinton. He should never be invited to give a speech anywhere. He ruined the lives of the young.
William, let's just try and stay on topic here. Anxiety resulting from the high cost of a college education these days. Andrea, I think you touched on that earlier, but it certainly is a major issue, is it not?
It is, definitely. A lot of students who I've spoken with have mentioned that as a primary concern. Another interesting thing to note is that it was only about in the last five, depression was always sort of the number one reason why students came to the College Counseling Center. But in the last 5 years, anxiety has overtaken it. And I do think that, the economic concerns, as well as all the other things that we've mentioned, probably have had something to do with it beating out depression.
800-642-1234. William, thanks for your call. Let's go to Justin next, who's in Appleton. Justin, hello. Welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Well, thanks for having me. My thoughts on this topic on why we're seeing so many more students coming in for counseling and things with mental health in the colleges is kind of based on, like, when I was in grade school, it was just about the time when if you had ADD, quote, you were given Ritalin. By the time I was out of, grade school, they started going more towards the, well, let's try other things and counseling and things like that. And, I've been in and out of college now for the last couple of years, for like 10, 15 years now. Now, whereas with my daughter, who's 9 in grade school, who has quote-unquote ADD, they give her counseling and do all this stuff. So she's more of a counselor now than a student at 9 years old. So I'm thinking the students are more in touch with themselves. It's just now hitting that wave of where, the kids came off the Ritalin era to the self-counseling and the self-evaluation era. So now they're more looking at themselves and seeing their problems that most of us have had most of our lives, through many generations. It's just now they're more self-aware and more willing to go in. And then the second portion of it is they're more isolated because of the new technologies these days. They may live, next to like 6 people but not talk to any of them.
Professor Jarko, what about that, about what Justin is saying here?
Well, it's a really interesting point. I think that, there are a variety of different types of treatment that is available to children, adolescents, and young adults now. And I think that in some ways moving away from pharmacotherapy where you're just giving people medication and perhaps supplementing that with more one-on-one counseling can be quite helpful, except in certain cases where people have really intractable illness and symptoms where they can't be helped by talk therapy alone and when medication is absolutely necessary. But medication does have a certain amount of side effects, and it's obviously extremely, extremely important and useful for certain individuals. But as we kind of shift away from a medication alone kind of strategy, people are perhaps becoming more aware of their experiences. And we are trying to kind of do outreach and let people know that it is okay and normative to have certain kinds of experiences. And I think that people are just now beginning to understand kind of what is the difference between the typical type of anxiety that people will have. And everybody has anxiety. It's actually a healthy thing, and it lets us do a lot of things that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And trying to really learn what is the difference between this kind of normal level of anxiety and something that's really more on the level of kind of an illness. So I think that the outreach that has been done by a lot of groups around the country to kind of normalize the experience of mental health problems is critical and really important, and is allowing more people to go and seek different types of help.
We've heard from listeners on our Facebook page who say, well, this is just another example of how we're coddling grown adults. And one of our listeners said this is a symptom of how liberal institutions like college campuses create an atmosphere in which students are encouraged to feel as though they are a victim. Andrea, any truth to that?
I often get emails to that effect as well from readers. What I can say is that when I talk to college students who are dealing with mental health issues, their suffering is really real, and I don't think there's necessarily a downside to seeking help. So I mean, but I will say, though, and going back to sort of the sort of parenting piece, you know, a lot of people who I've, college counseling center directors and therapists I've talked to say that they don't see the kind of resilience among young people as they would like. And, you know, part of that, I think we, you know, we talked a little bit about before about this, you know, this this notion that kids and adolescents, you know, can't fail. And that is something that, you know, parents can really do something about to sort of get their kids sort of ready for getting, you know, the sort of basic, you know, letting go, sort of letting, you know, students make mistakes and making sure, like, moving more to, like, the coach role and, you know, giving them more freedom to, you know, find their own way.
Well, don't young people need freedom to fail, don't they? I mean, how else do you learn?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, that's very true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking to one psychiatrist here or psychologist here who, you know, was saying one of the things that she likes, you know, especially for students who have sort of a history of psychological problems is when they're about ready to go to college, you know, they should be able to, they should take at least one out of town trip by themselves, you know, buy their own ticket, get to the airport or get to the train station by themselves. And if they get lost, so much the better, because then they've got to learn how to figure it out. And so building that kind of, and so there's also a real movement among college campuses to boost resilience, to try to give students the skills that they may not have had before on you know, just how do you, if you're facing an obstacle, how do you, or you make a mistake, you fall down, you know, how do you sort of get yourself back up?
And I just want to say, in, with regard to the comment that your reader had posted, I think it would be a really terrible mistake to cut back on the types of services that we provide students in the college setting, because suicide is the second most common cause of death among college students. So while we've been focusing on anxiety and depression, these things have really serious consequences. Mm-hmm. And so it's not coddling. It's absolutely critical that people get the kind of help that they need in order to prevent these potentially disastrous outcomes. Well, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, that brings up another issue because particularly at state institutions, tax-funded, publicly funded universities and colleges across the country, we're seeing a lot of budget cuts. Are there enough services available on campuses for the students who need them? Andrea?
I think most schools would probably say no. They really are struggling to keep up with demand, and so they're having to do things like, you know, move to more group therapy. You know, a lot of schools have a cap on the number of sessions that students can access. You know, so there are, you know, there are these great messages of, like, you know, come in and get help, but, you know, sometimes students will you know, try to access help, and they could be, you know, could have a wait of 2 or 3 weeks before they can come in and have an appointment. Or, you know, they can only have a certain number of sessions, and then they have to find care elsewhere. So that's why, you know, some of the more, you know, some colleges are really trying to do novel things to basically do more with less. You know, doing things like using peer counselors and trying to assess, you know, what students can get, could just need someone to talk to, you know, and maybe could, maybe, you know, a trained peer counselor that would serve them. And then, you know, reserving the psychiatric appointments, the psychology appointments for students with, you know, more serious mental health issues, you know, kids who are suicidal, or have a, you know, history of a serious depression or bipolar disorder, or, you know, doing things like, you know, doing some treatment, like treatment for anxiety disorders, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is very effective, doing it online.
And just to kind of to add to that, while people might not feel great about the amount of money that state universities are paying for their mental health centers, the vast majority of students who actually withdraw or drop out of college, they do so because of these mental disorders that they have. And so by giving them treatment on campus, they're actually, you know, really retaining more of the funds that they have coming in, because you actually get your students who are continuing to be there and pay tuition and bring in money to your institution. So in some ways, it's a win-win.
Here's an email from Derek. Derek writes, I am a recent college graduate, and I truly believe this is a result of the stigma surrounding mental health slowly going away. Students are beginning to realize it's okay to go to the counseling center, and that doesn't mean there is something wrong with them. My classmates and professors were very open about mental health and combating the stigma. People do not feel as pressured to ignore their issues and can finally seek help. Is that what we're seeing? I mean, the fact that people are more willing to seek help, that means it's okay these days then, right? Andrea, what do you think?
I think that's absolutely correct. When I was at University of Michigan, there are 12 student-run mental health advocacy groups. Even just a couple years ago, there were one or two. I mean, the level of, you know, a lot of the student governments, they're talking very openly about mental health. So I do definitely think that stigma is eroding, and which is great, and there is definitely just more of a culture of people are just open about seeking help in a way that they definitely weren't when I was in college, a couple decades ago. So that I definitely think is, and part of it is because of, you know, what the outreach the colleges are doing. Part of it, I think, is just, you know, culturally there's just more of a conversation around it, you know, with some of the things that the advocacy groups have done. You know, I said all multiple celebrities, you know, openly talking about their mental health issues. So yes, I think that's exactly right. I mean, colleges do say that, you know, there are certain communities, you know, especially international students, you know, the Greek system, athletes, that there's still work to be done. But on the whole, it's a very different environment.
Professor, I imagine some students may actually believe their anxiety is normal, and over time they might say to themselves, well, this is just how college is. Mm-hmm. How can a student know if they truly need to seek treatment?
Well, when you start to have impairment, so you can't do the things that you would normally do, and you don't, you're just unable to kind of function in the way that you used to be able to do so. So if it's impairing your behavior, you're not doing and going to the places that you would normally go to, that's a clear sign that there's something wrong. So being anxious about an upcoming test, that's very different from literally not being able to go to take the test because you're so anxious about it. So knowing those differences and the types of symptoms is very important. So you're really looking at impairment and feelings of high anxiety that are changing the way that you're approaching your day-to-day life much of the day for several weeks at a time. That's really when you start to get into more of a diagnosis range when it comes to anxiety. But I think that the important thing to say here, and something that, you know, I don't want your listeners to have such a gloomy kind of perspective on things, that the really, really good news here is that, especially in anxiety disorders, you know, a lot of people have anxiety disorders when they're young. If you're able to treat those disorders, the vast majority of patients will go on to be healthy adults later on. So there's this really remarkable discontinuity between the amount of adolescent and young adult anxiety that we see versus later in life anxiety. So it's really, really critical for people to try and get help during these early years. And if they're able to do so, then their prognosis is usually much more positive. And that has a beneficial effect for the whole society, both in terms of the costs that are associated with long-term treatment, productivity, and just general wellness and happiness and well-being.
We've got about a minute left. Andrea Peterson, from your perspective, what more do we need to be doing? What are we not doing that we should be doing on our college campuses to improve the mental health of our college students?
I mean, I think most colleges would say that, you know, more resources would be great. But I think, you know, what's been really heartening is to see how passionate a lot of students are about, you know, just about their own mental health and taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Andrea Peterson, Johanna Jarko, thank you so much for the discussion this hour. It's been a real eye-opener, I think, for a lot of people, and I really appreciate you coming on the radio and talking about these issues here with me today.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And I hope everybody has a happy Thanksgiving, or at least a reasonably well-adjusted one. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen will be back on Monday, and it's, of course, all things political on Mondays at 1 o'clock, so you'll have that to look forward to. Coming up tomorrow at this time on the Ideas Network, some special programming. WPR presents the Best of the Third Coast Audio Festival winners, which will feature the winners of the 16th Annual Radio Documentary Competition. Innovative and insightful, the stories will engage, provoke, entertain, and transport listeners, proving that all you need to discover new worlds is a little box and an antenna. Thanks to Zeb Gessman for producing this show and KP Whaley for on-air production. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. I hope you have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving tomorrow. That'll do it for me. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.